and welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, the host, the co-host of The Big Show. We have, as always, with us this morning, Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor. We also have Peg Webb on the line. Peg, of course, is a senior financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group. Welcome to both of you. And I understand we're going to have an open phones. People can ask you guys anything they want for the next hour. Is that right?
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. Hello, listeners. Thank you for being with us. This is the first show of our 29th season of doing this, and thank you for being with us. Many of you, I know, have been with us a lot of years, and we appreciate that. We appreciate you. We wouldn't be here without you. And yes, Susie, you're absolutely right. Open line show. We'll take questions the entire hour. Any financial question you can think of, text or call. We'll get to as many as we can. Peg, I know we have one that we wanted to circle back on that came in a few weeks ago that we wanted to revisit. But I also wanted to pose the question to you. Is there anything that you're getting prevalently, consistently from clients or out there interacting with people in the workplace or social? Is there something that you're hearing? Because oftentimes, if we're getting something like that consistently, our listeners maybe have the same question. Anything spring to mind for you that you wanted to talk about?
Well, this could take the whole 22 minutes that we have to talk about. But people are kind of all over the place with their questions. Friends, family, clients are asking about, well, number one, they're worried about inflation. So inflation has been the topic because we're feeling it. Each and every one of us is feeling that things are costing more. And the headlines are, if the Trump administration makes some dramatic changes, that is that going to cause even more inflation? So the question is there something that I should be doing now ahead of time before we run into this problem where inflation is running wild? And so we talked a little bit about this, Bruce, a couple of weeks ago when we had Matthew Parks from our investment team on. And he said it was just a little bit too early to tell. But what I would tell people and what I am telling my friends and clients is that, you know, you should obviously look at your portfolio, see if you are in the allocation that you want to be in. And mostly people who are retired, when we're creating paychecks for them for the rest of their lives, are you in the right position right now to be able to make sure you have confidence in that income stream, and then just review the rest of your portfolio? That's what we're doing at Wealth Enhancement Group at this point. Bruce?
Yeah, that's a great answer. And and you actually hit on kind of the same thing I was thinking about. And just to even be more precise, people are coming to me and they're specifically worried about these promised tariffs that the president-elect wants to impose. And you know, I think a lot of this, though, Peg, gets back to politics and the divisiveness of our politics. It always seems to be, no matter how much you and I talk about it, that we've got all kinds of historical data that it doesn't matter if there's a Republican or a Democrat in the Oval Office. The stock market tends to do well and very consistent over time. But people still, you know, they're fearful before an election, then they're fearful after the election if the person that they wanted to win doesn't win. And I got a lot of this in 2020 also when people were unhappy with the results of the election. So I think a lot of this is motivated almost more by politics than any economic reality. So we'll just have to wait and see, you know, what actually does get done. You know, you can talk about a lot of things before and after an election, but there's still three bodies of government that have to vote on and pass things. And how much of this is negotiating? And even if he does everything that he says he wants to do, not all economists are in agreement that it's necessarily going to be bad. Some think it's going to be bad, but some don't. So I tell people, and you just gave the right answer. Review your portfolio. Is it appropriate based on your goals and objectives, your core values, your time horizon, your risk tolerance? If there's nothing that significantly has changed in your life, I don't think you need to make significant changes just because you might not like who won the election. So, yeah, I'm getting variations of that same question. It sounds like you are also. Hey, Peg, we also wanted to circle back. We had a question on the show a few weeks ago. Maybe it didn't get on the show. Maybe it was something that came in writing, and we didn't get a chance to address it, but we wanted to.
Yes. So I thought this was a good question. This person wants to retire in 5 to 7 years, but they're kind of worried about what life after 45 years of working might entail. Any thoughts on who I might talk to get advice? I love this because a lot of people come to Wealth Enhancement Group after, you know, working decades of time, and they haven't practiced actually retiring. Now, I love the fact that this person has 5 to 7 years and they're thinking about it, because I have to tell you, Bruce, we still see people 1 or 2 years before they're going to retire. People just kind of mentally put it off. And it's not something that they, you know, do every day is think about, oh, how do I create my own paycheck? You know, what are my taxes going to look like after I retire? All of that. So this person is asking us, you know, who should I talk to? Where do I get advice? So the first thing we would say is make sure that you have a spouse, that you discuss it with your spouse. Because what I find is in my decades of time doing this job is one hasn't really told the other what their plans are. And so it's probably a good idea to run it by each other and see if you have the same thoughts about what retirement looks like. The second thing is you can incorporate in your adult children, or you know, maybe some brothers or sisters or somebody, or maybe somebody who's already gone through it is usually a good idea just to, you know, hear their way of like, how did you do it? Did everything work out the way you wanted it to? And then, of course, I'm going to say, you know, seek some financial advice from somebody who has worked with a lot of people like you. And I always say, Bruce, that I have kind of practiced for decades of time with existing people, because I take what I learned, and a lot of our advisors have been with us for decades of time, is they look at, you know, the past and how did the outcomes, you know, end up in coaching these people. So it doesn't hurt to get some financial advice from someone, because most people will take some kind of an introductory meeting, at least so that you could get some advice. And then a couple others, you know, people, colleagues at work that may have done it before. And then also the last one might be your doctor. Like, you want to know that, you know, if you have this 5 to 7 year time horizon and that's when you want to go do all these things on your bucket list, maybe you do discuss with your doctor, you know, or am I okay? Do you foresee anything coming? How's your family history? I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on that, but that would be kind of the last person on the list after you've exhausted all the others that I mentioned. Bruce?
Peg, that is such a good question, and you gave such a good answer to it. The only thing I would add is, you know, with regard to retiring, I tell people all the time, when is the last time that you did something well the first time you did it? And there's very few things in life that we are good at right away. Peg, you're a good golfer now, but you probably weren't the first time you went out and played. And so we've never retired before, so we're not good at it. We don't know how to do this. We've never done it before. And there's a lot of trial and error involved, and that's okay. We have a plan that's adaptable and adjustable. And if you're not getting as much income as you want for the lifestyle you want, we can increase that income. If you're taking too much income and it's just building up in your checking account, we can slow it down. We can, you know, we can make changes. We can figure this out as we go. But the other key point that I would make, and you kind of alluded to it, is that people oftentimes that have not yet retired think that when they do retire, they're going to spend less money than they did while they were working. And on some level, that seems logical, right? A lot of costs associated with work go away. I'm not contributing to a company retirement plan anymore. Maybe I don't have the same expenditure for travel, gas, and getting to the job, clothes. Maybe I don't have to spend as much money on clothes and so on. But as you talked about, Peg, those expenses that go away are going to be replaced by other things. Bucket list. I'm doing air quotes around bucket list. I'm going to go do things that I've always wanted to do. It might be travel. It might be adventure. It might be volunteering or charitable giving. But whatever those things are, in our experience of having done this for decades, I can tell you that the vast, vast, vast majority of people will actually spend a lot more the first few years after they retire than they did while they were last few years of work. So, and that's okay. Just you need to be aware of it. You need to plan for it. And you need to know that this is kind of a work in progress to figure out how much you're going to need for the lifestyle that you want. So great question. Great answer, Peg. Susie, I got more things in my notes that I could hit if we need to. But I think listeners are want to chime in.
That's right. 651-461-9226. We'll start with this one. A question for Bruce and Peg and Wealth Enhancement. We plan to retire to our cabin in Brainerd, the Brainerd Lakes area. However, it's only 800 square feet. We would like to put an addition on, which can be expensive. What are your thoughts on a 401k withdrawal after 59 and a half years old to add on to our future home?
That's a great question. So, Peg, kind of, what I see as the issue here is, what's the most efficient way of enhancing the home that they want to live in. Now, obviously, there's a lot of things we don't know about the texture, but it seems like it's kind of a comparison between.
Peg, you want to jump in?
Do I pay with my own resources, my own assets? I can. Did you lose me?
Yeah, we just briefly did. I know you're, and Peg, you're listening as well.
You're so kind of just going in and out.
Yeah, you might let.
I can take it.
Okay, go ahead, Peg.
I can take it from here. Yes.
Oh.
So, well,
go ahead. Go ahead, Peg.
800 square feet. Yeah, 800 square feet. I think you need an addition. I mean, you would be maybe a outlier if you can live in 800 square feet for a long time. In addition, I would look at a lot of your alternatives here, because number one, if you're in a position where you don't have any debt right now and you could get a loan for that addition, I'm not quite sure how much it's going to cost or what percentage that is of your income, as you retire. But taking money from, let's focus on taking money from a 401k. What you could do, if that's what you want to do, and that's okay, you might want to do it over a couple years of time. And what I mean by that is you could take out a loan, get the cabin addition started, and then maybe take a drawdown on how much you need in paying the contractor, and then, pay that loan off then either right when the cabin is done, the addition, or you could also just pay it over time. Let's say you set yourself 3 years of time that we're going to pay off that loan. The reason I say that is because sometimes it's just a little bit too abrupt to take out a big chunk and have a high tax year. And so maybe if you did it over 1, 2, or 3 years, that would lower the blow on how much you would owe Uncle Sam. So Bruce, you're right in that I don't have a lot of information about these people, but that's some of the things that I have, things that I have coached over the decades of time. Bruce?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was fading in and out. But yeah, it's a question of, if I'm not going to pay with my own resources and I finance it, what's the cost of the debt service? And what are the tax ramifications of those 401k withdrawals? Because as they said, they would be past 59 and a half, so they don't have to worry about any premature distribution penalties, but you still have to pay taxes. So I like what you said, Peg. It might be a combination of systematic withdrawals from year to year so you don't have bracket creep or end up paying more in taxes on those 401k withdrawals than you would have to, and or other resources that they might have with without tax considerations and or even financing part of it. But I agree with what you started with. 800 square feet does not seem like a lot of space, and I agree that if you're going to have a comfortable retirement, you probably want a little bit more space. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. Bruce and Peg, President Biden is expected to sign the Social Security Fairness Act. Can you talk about what that might mean for people who are on pensions and other pensioners? Will they be treated fairly? Your thoughts.
Peg, do you know what's in that act? I've vaguely read about it, but I don't know the specifics.
Oh, yes. So, you know, over the time, there was several clients that would come in and say, oh, I don't get Social Security, or I only get a really little bit of Social Security because I took a second job after I retired as a federal worker or a teacher or a policeman or a firefighter. All these people who have pensions from the government, per se, they didn't get Social Security. So this act is saying, it's a fairness act, saying, you know what? We actually need to correct this 50-year-old problem, if you will, and it sounds like Biden is going to sign off on it. And the fairness is, let those people have Social Security as well. And what's been happening, Bruce and Susie, is that people are passing away who had pensions. And now they maybe didn't take 100% of the pension for the spouse. They maybe took 50%, or some took life only on themselves and left the spouse with no income. So, you know, all the rules with Social Security is that, you know, if you have a bucket of Social Security and you pass away, you know, you can choose to have your spouse have 50% of that. So they're trying to get fairness for all those federal workers. I was happy to read this, and I was endorsing it. And so I hope that it does get signed for the fairness for all the federal workers. Bruce?
Yeah, so you see this as totally a positive, not a negative, for everybody listening, or no impact at all, but no negative impact.
Other than there's a lot more debt with this, right, on the whole government. And so I'm hoping that there's some kind of an offset. And I would say that President Trump coming in is going to try to work on this offset. And so we'll see how that goes. But I do like the Fairness Act for those people. And the only reason I feel like I know a lot about it is because we have a lot of clients that are in that position. Bruce?
Yep. Yep, it's the same old story. It sounds like a really good idea, but how do you pay for it? And that's the bugaboo. Susie, do we have time for one more?
Yeah, I think so. A texter writes, can you talk about pensions and Social Security? If you get a pension, do you still get Social Security? This is Shelly. Thanks, Shelly.
Shelly, thanks for your text. So, Peg, this is kind of what you were just talking about,
but
a little bit different wrinkle.
Well, it sounds like it's exactly what I was talking about, is that if you have a pension and then you weren't provided Social Security like you and I, Bruce, you know, we put in get our 40 credits or whatever it is, and then we get a statement showing our Social Security benefits, and we get choices as to when we want to take it, that kind of thing. And so this should change that for people who have a pension that are federal workers. Bruce?
Yeah, I just want to draw a distinction, though, between so a lot of people get a pension in the private sector. And if you have a pension and you didn't work for a county or a state or a federal government, you worked in the private sector for a private company and you get a pension, that has absolutely no impact on your Social Security benefit that you receive.
That's what I wanted to know.
We're seeing.
We're seeing
fewer and fewer. Yep.
Say it again. You're seeing fewer and fewer people with pensions.
We're seeing fewer and fewer. Yep. The pension plans, or what are technically called a defined benefit plan, have largely been replaced by what are called defined contribution plans, or people might know that as a 401k, a 457, a 403b. So we're seeing a lot less of those old traditional pensions, but it is important to differentiate between private and public employees in that pension.
All right, let's get to more questions after the short break. 651-461-9226. And we are back for the second half of Your Money. Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, and Peg Webb on the line. And your questions this half hour at 651-461-9226. Bruce, do you want me to just jump in with questions, or is there anything you want to wrap up before we do that?
Peg, anything you wanted to add from the first half of the show, or anything you want to go back on?
No, let's get the listeners involved.
All right.
Yep.
Texter writes, I retired from my company after 32 years, I'm collecting my pension. I went back to the same company and worked part-time, and there's a limitation on how much I make. Why can they do that? This seems to not make any sense. What do you think? Anyway, your thoughts on that.
Peg, I assume when the texter says there's a limitation on what he can make, I assume he's talking about and how it impacts his Social Security benefit if he has not yet reached what we call FRA, full retirement age. Is that how you interpret that question?
Yeah, other than the company having some type of, if you receive your pension, it almost is, in some cases, unfair to the people who are still working that haven't been able to collect their pension. They put some kind of cap on. I've seen this with some of the large companies in Minneapolis do that for some reason. So then you're almost like on an hourly, versus a annual compensation. So other than that, Bruce, it could be this Social Security because we don't know the age of this person, Bruce.
Yeah, well, you hit on something I hadn't thought of. So the part that I thought of that we see not infrequently is somebody is still working, they've reached age 62 or older, and they want to draw their Social Security, but if you haven't yet reached your full retirement age, which can vary based on when you were born, but let's assume that your full retirement age is 67, and you're less than 67, and you're working, and you're making, more than, I can't remember where they draw the line in the sand now, it's around $21,000. If you go over that, then every dollar of that you go over, you lose about 50 cents on the dollar on your Social Security benefits. So whether that's fair or not, that's the law, and we coach our clients all the time. If you're going to continue to work, then don't start taking Social Security yet, unless you're going to make less than $20,000 a year. But you thought of something I did not, and I have seen that before, Peg, where literally people can almost be working for free or disincentivizing themselves. If they continue to work past a certain age, it has a detrimental impact on their pension, and it's almost a forced retirement. Now, again, is that fair? I don't know if it's fair or not, but if that's the way the plan has been set up and it's legal and they get to do that, then you have to plan accordingly. And if you're someone that doesn't want to retire and you want to continue to work, but it's detrimental to work at your old company, maybe you can find some sort of a part-time job somewhere else that's intrinsically rewarding or gives you, value or a reason to get up in the morning. But sometimes those things just are what they are. And you can't change it, and you have to plan accordingly. Last thoughts, Peg?
No, I think that's perfect. But I do see where if we all could just say, hey, I'll take pension and I'll go back to work for the same money that I used to make, that usually doesn't work. Mm. That's just my experience. Bruce?
Agreed.
651-461-9226. The texter's right. We are a 66-year-old retired couple with a low seven-figure portfolio. What steps or strategies can we start to reduce our RMD distribution in the next few years?
So, Peg, when the texter writes RMD, for listeners that don't know, that's an acronym for Required Minimum Distributions. That's the minimum amount that we all must take if we have traditional tax-deferred retirement plans, like a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k. We reach a certain age, and for most people right now, it's age 73. When we hit that age, there's a minimum that we have to start to withdraw from these plans. What are some of the strategic planning things that we're doing with our clients to minimize the negative impacts of required minimum distributions? Peg?
Yes. So required minimum distributions, the age that you're mandated to take money out is 73 years old. And if you're charitably inclined at 70 and a half, you could start pulling out some monies from your IRA and have them go directly to charity, and then you won't pay any income tax on them. What I thought about right away, and this is a strategy that we're using with a lot of clients, is converting to a Roth. And a Roth IRA is something that you deposit money in, and you would have to pay tax on your IRA for, you know, converting it to Roth, but then the Roth will grow tax-free, and you won't have that required minimum distribution on those assets. So it's something where maybe you want to do a little bit at a time. Here's where taxes come into play. You can do some analysis or some checking to see if you converted 10,000, if you converted 20,000, if you converted 30,000, how does that affect your taxes? And the reason I suggest that people actually do their taxes is if you're going to file. So let's say for 2026 now, because now we're in 2025, it's too late for 2024. But if you start to do an analysis of how much could I convert to a Roth, and look at the ripple effects that would happen if you did that. It's sometimes not blatantly clear as to how much tax you might have to pay on something else, like your Medicare or your Social Security. There's lots of gotchas for that. So once again, I just highly recommend that you do kind of an example or an analysis now for 2025 before you go and convert a lot of that IRA to Roth. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, Peg, this is something that we see frequently, and it's right in the wheelhouse. It's very, very typical traditional financial planning on how we mitigate taxes. And I like, again, exactly where you went in terms of some of what we call the ripple effects. It's not just the ordinary income taxes that you're going to pay in this tax year, but is there going to be a ripple effect, meaning you're going to pay more taxes on your Social Security or your Medicare Part B premiums may go up if you have too much income? Now, the texter did say low seven figures, but they didn't say if that's all in tax-deferred plans or not. That would make a difference. But again, we always talk about soaking up the bracket that you're in anyway. So either taking withdrawals from these tax-deferred plans to get the income that you want for the lifestyle that you want, or maybe even taking more than you need for income and converting that into a Roth where there will not be future required minimum distributions. It's the old, and again, we've said this countless times on the show, sometimes you're better off paying a little bit more in taxes this year to pay a lot less in taxes in the future, and that required minimum distribution, that dollar amount, can really sneak up on you as you get older and force income out and cause bracket creep and kick you into a higher tax bracket. So sometimes you're better off paying a little bit more taxes than you might have to now to avoid that later. But we can do that. Planning is standard operating procedure for us. We look at it for virtually all of our clients to see if, number one, does a Roth conversion make sense or not? And number two, if it does, how much should we do? And I don't, again, Peg, I don't think most people can determine that and figure that out on their own. So it's a great question. It's not an uncommon question. And we come back to, you know, don't try this alone at home. Get some help to do this. Susie?
All right.
I've got one other thing, Bruce. Here, though, too. For longer term, and I forgot about this, and I think it's really important, is a traditional IRA, when it comes to long-term care expenses, I just read an article this week, which is put a light bulb on again for me, saying, okay, long-term care expenses and the premiums that you're paying maybe for long-term care insurance are tax deductible. And because 70% of us do not itemize anymore, I do see tax returns, though, with long-term care expenses and their premiums get you over the bogey, if you will, for the standard. So you can actually take out your IRA, you can take money out of your IRA for those long-term care costs and then kind of offset it on this itemization. So I recently just remembered again, because now clients are getting a little bit older and I could see the impact of that on their tax return. So I just wanted to add that one more idea.
All right. Yeah, great. Texter writes at 651-461-9226. Should I cash out our whole life insurance so we don't have to keep paying a high premium? Is it necessary even to have life insurance after 65 when we have no debt and about $1 million in savings?
Oh, man, what a great question. So, Peg, again, not an uncommon one for us. Somebody gets, let me kind of set it up for you. Somebody goes out and they acquire life insurance, probably younger in their life. When you're getting started, you're raising a family, you have a mortgage, you have kids, and if something happens to you or your significant other or your spouse, and that income no longer comes into the home, life insurance is financial protection sort of to replace that lost income. There's an infusion of capital. You're already suffering emotionally. You've lost a loved one. Now you don't want to suffer financially. So we insure the lives, and which is basically insuring the income. But as time goes on, kids get launched. They're self-sufficient. Debt is reduced. Maybe mortgages are paid off. Assets are accumulated. And do you even need life insurance death benefit anymore? If one of you predeceases the other, is the survivor going to be fine without that life insurance? So really good question, not an infrequent one. Peg, how would you reply to that?
Well, there's a lot of things that you can do, and there's a lot of information that you should get ahead of time before you say, I don't want this thing, I'm cashing it out. And because there are options, and what we recommend is an in-service illustration. What does that mean? Well, that means, how is your life insurance performing? Obviously, you're some kind of a whole life or something where you're paying premiums and you have a certain death benefit on that insurance policy. The question is, if the premiums that you're paying, you know, is that life insurance going to last as long as you do? That's what an in-service illustration is. It says, okay, if you'd earn 4% or 6% on this policy, is this going to, you know, sustain itself as long as you make the premiums for the rest of your life? So that's the first thing you should do, get that information. The second thing you can do is you can take an income off your cash value. If you're looking for some additional income and you don't mind if the insurance policy face value might go lower, that's another thing you could look at. And then if you do cash it out, make sure that you've been in it long enough that there isn't a huge surrender. Because a lot of these policies with the life insurance attached to it is a long time. It could be a decade of time that you have a surrender. So sometimes it might pay off to you know, maybe you have 2 years left, it might pay off to just hold it for two more years, or it might make sense to cash out half of it in one particular year and another in a second year, because there could be a taxable event. Bruce?
Peg, that, again, really good answer. And it's a question that we probably could spend an entire show talking about the different nuances and possibilities of life insurance. But I think you hit the key highlights. You hit the major headlines. You know, the in-service illustration tells us everything. And we frequently, for clients or even prospective clients that aren't clients yet, we can do that analysis, even if they didn't get the life insurance at Wealth Enhancement Group, but they have it and they don't know their agent anymore, their agent retired or moved, and they don't know who to talk to at their insurance company, and they don't know what to do with the policy. They can come to us. We will ask them to get the in-service illustration, and we can then do an analysis on the health of the policy and advise them what their options are and what might be the best course of action for them. So that's really the key thing, and you already hit on it. One other thing I thought of, though, the way I set up the question, and I think that's the way the texter meant it, or at least that's the way I interpreted, but there's another reason to have life insurance late in life. So the traditional, more common reason for life insurance is to protect yourself when you have debt, when you're still raising a family, when you haven't accumulated assets yet. The texter said, we're debt-free and we've got, you know, plenty of money. But so the traditional reason of protecting, you know, the survivors from any economic hardship maybe isn't there anymore. But a second reason why I still have life insurance and why some of my clients we have life insurance is as a legacy planning tool. If it's a goal to leave a larger legacy to loved ones, to kids or grandkids or favorite charities or all of the above, life insurance can be a very efficient legacy planning tool, whereby keeping that life insurance policy, whether you continue to pay the premium at the same level, or you're able to reduce the premium, or maybe discontinue premiums altogether, maybe the equity in the policy will sustain the death benefit. But it's not really a strategy for you per se, or you and your partner. It's really a strategy maybe for other loved ones like kids and leaving them a bigger inheritance. And life insurance death benefits, by law, are always income tax free, unlike a lot of other investments like IRAs, where if they inherit an IRA, they're going to pay ordinary income taxes on it. They can inherit a life insurance death benefit with absolutely no income taxes tied to that death benefit. So I would tell the texter, maybe you don't want or need this life insurance anymore in terms of protecting each other, but maybe you want to continue it to leave a larger legacy to loved ones. That might be a secondary reason that you hadn't considered yet. But otherwise, Peg, everything you said was spot on. Just do an analysis of the policy, determine what your goals and objectives and priorities are, but to just surrender it without being careful might be the wrong decision, because it might create unnecessary taxes. You might be able to use that equity for income without paying a lot of taxes. So there's options. There's things you can do with that policy, but it starts with us understanding exactly where you're at with that policy. Susie?
651-461-9226. That is the number to call. And we have got a lot of questions, Bruce and Peg. And I'll just read you this one this morning. This young woman writes, I'm 48 years old, and my husband recently passed away. I plan to work till I'm 66. I'm about $40,000 into credit card bills. I'll be refinancing my home to take care of debt and get myself back on track. I left a job for a better one that will be paying about $150,000. The job I just left provided me with about $45,000 in a 403B. What would you recommend? Oh, the current company she's working with says put it all into an annuity, and they're wondering what your thoughts. She's wondering what your thoughts are. Like, maybe should she diversify more? And it's about 3.5 minutes left.
Yeah. So first of all, you're right, Susie. That is young, 48, and to lose your spouse, that's tragic. That's sad. But you know, it sounds like she's thinking of things correctly and properly, and hopefully she's got a really good support system. But anyway, texter, so sorry for your loss. Peg, there's so many different roads we can go down here. Prioritize what you think are the top two or three things that we might be able to help her with.
Well, the first one is with the 403B and having a rollover from her her employer that she just left and put it into annuity. A lot of annuities have long-term surrenders. And this one may not, but if it sounds like you need some liquidity just for the what ifs. And so I would not take my 403B and put it into a longer term, you know, with a surrender type of product. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I would like to compliment this person on, you know, getting rid of those high interest credit card percentages that they're paying and do some refinancing and get that debt down. And then it sounds like you'll have a good income. I don't know what your actual monthly stipend is to live, but it would be good then to just once again start saving. And I'm so sorry for your loss. You're just so young and to have to go through that. I wish you the best of luck, Bruce.
Yeah, and we're running out of time, but really quickly, you know, when she said annuity in the text, I'm assuming that it means somebody's recommending that she get some sort of guaranteed income, which I could see the attractiveness of. But to your point, Peg, which I think was excellent, she probably also needs some liquidity. Now, even though this was a 403B and there may be premature distribution penalties and taxes since she's only 48, I would still hate to tie that up further with surrender penalties on an annuity. So I agree with that. And if she needs access to that money, even though there might be some taxes and some penalties. And then I don't remember the rules, Peg, but there may be some hardship provisions where she can avoid the 10% penalty. But I think you hit on all the right things. And I think it sounds like even before she texted, she's already doing a lot of the right things. So, yeah, absolutely text her. Best of luck. Our thoughts and prayers are with you.
Yeah, that's very young. Well, that's about it for us, Bruce and Peg, but we want to remind people, particularly this week, we had many, many, many text questions that we did not get answered. So people listening right now, I want you to write this number down, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.